So yeah, I wanted to be an astronaut, or I wanted to be a performer, like an actor or a singer,
Yeah.
or a hypnotist, or an author. It's kind of it always sort of rotated through those things as I was growing up. Those were always the things that I wanted to do when I grew up. I think it was a lot of it was about wanting to entertain people, wanting to be able to do something that makes people go, "Oh, wow, I love that." Even though I was petrified of the thought of speaking with to strangers, no way I could have ever gone on stage at that time and spoken or performed or sang. It was just too terrifying. And yet, those are the things I wanted to be when I grew up.
Isn't that? My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion, and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools, and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion, and purpose. Fear is a powerful force that can drive us to change or prevent it. I have friends who don't travel far from home due to anxiety and the fear of what might be. At our last event, we had a couple of speakers exploring fear. One of them is the guest on today's podcast, Keith Blakemore Noble. Not long after my conversation with Keith, I had an encounter whilst out running that enabled me to witness the automatic response my mind and body have to fear. You can find the full story in the shortcast Fear Rising. But in brief, I was running and something moved across the leaves in front of me. It was obviously a ferocious beast going to eat me because that is how my body reacted to it. I felt the fear climb up the right side of my body and land in my brain. And once there, my brain identified it as a toad and my body relaxed. Further along the path, I witnessed the same experience in one of my wonderful woodland companions. The point is, my body went into shock and fear way before my intelligence kicked in, and that is the point with fear, it's often irrational. Keith Blakemore Noble is the UK's number one fear strategist. As a young lad growing up, Keith was drawn to the idea of performing and writing, and yet painfully shy and petrified of meeting strangers, so the dream felt virtually impossible. He discovered the IT industry and the safety net of being a tech wizard. Everyone wants your services, and whilst computers are temperamental, they are not socially challenging. However, after 20 years working in IT, there came a point when stepping out from behind the screen felt necessary. But for Keith, that was the biggest problem. Having spent yet another Christmas party hiding in the toilet to avoid people, he realised his life was seriously being held back by his phobia. By chance, Keith was invited to attend a free personal development seminar, where he watched someone from the audience be taken through a process that gave them the confidence to dance for everyone, whereas only moments before, they were too fearful to even consider it. This was a massive turning point in Keith's life. Since then, Keith has conquered his fears to the extent he's become a coach, a stage hypnotist, a trainer, and an occasional magician. It doesn't get much more transformational than that. Keith has discovered a passion for helping people release their fears and turn those fears into strengths and finding their own passion. Since 2010, he has helped over 5,000 people across the planet to transform their lives, which is why he's known as the UK's number one fear strategist. Keith has come a long way since the IT days. He's been described as someone who brings natural humour and wit to the stage. As you will hear on her podcast, he has a captivating presence, allowing us to learn from him with ease. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Keith Blakemore Noble. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. I am delighted, as I always am, to be on these calls, to be with Keith Blakemore Noble. Now, I know him as a fear strategist, but I also know he's a coach, an international speaker, and I know he's got a book coming out. So I'm sure we might get to that. So Keith, come on, tell me a little bit more about yourself. How did you get to become a fear strategist?
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for having me here. That's a great question. So yes, I'm UK's number one fear strategist. It's all about helping people transform their deepest fears into their greatest strengths. I've been working, I've helped over 5,000 people across the planet since 2010 to do just that.
So you like spiders then, do you?
I used to, interestingly enough, spiders was, I used to have three phobias and spiders was one of them. And now I'm absolutely fine with spiders. No problem with them whatsoever.
Yeah. I must admit, it's spider season, isn't it, at this time of year? They're out looking to do their business at this time of year. So the house, and this is an old house, it's full of spiders. And my son didn't have a good journey with spiders. So fear strategist, how did you become a fear strategist? Let's have the story. So like, you know, obviously, yeah, I mean, it's funny to be say you're passionate about being a fear strategist, but I'm sure we're going to get there.
Yeah, I mean, the way I came about it was purely by accident. None of it was by design, because I used to work in IT. I had a very successful 20-year career in IT, but I was painfully, I used to think it was painfully shy and lacking in confidence. I now know, looking back on it, it was actually social phobia that I had. I was terrified of speaking with strangers.
Oh, right.
So naturally, I ended up working in IT. Perfect place for if you don't want to be speaking with
get
people.
Over your keyboard, hide, head down, look at the screen, easy.
Exactly. And things were going well with the career, but even there, it reached the point where it no longer becomes what you know, it's who you know that gets your career progression, networking and the contacts you make, which you can't really do if you get terrified by the thought of going to seminars and going to all these places where you'd meet people. And eventually, for me, things came to a head. I got talked into going to a Christmas party because I kind of knew the people from online, from chatting with them via the internet. I thought, how hard could it be? Turned up and found out exactly how hard it could be. It's one thing speaking to people from behind a computer screen. It's a very different thing actually physically meeting people in real life. And I, to cut a long story short, I ended up locking myself in the gents for half an hour while I had a full-on panic attack. I then fled. And that was the point I thought, you know, you cannot go on through life like this. What's life going to be like in 10 years' time?
Let's wind that little bit back a bit further, because that's obviously a hiatus point. Did you always have that fear? Did that manifest itself in your younger years?
Yeah, as far back as I could remember, I was always shy, always scared of speaking with strangers. Yes, right back to childhood days. Yeah,
because it's like, what did you want to be when you grew up?
When I grew up, I went through different phases of things, but the main things I wanted to be were, I wanted to be an astronaut at one point, which haven't made it yet, but you never know.
There's a theme here. My last podcast guest wanted to be an astronaut, and he may get there. And he may get there because he's rich enough to do it.
Oh, nice. It's not Richard Branson, was it?
No, it's not. He's his name's Tom Lee Belt. He's the last person on the podcast last week. And I mean, he reckons it'd have to come down to about £40,000 before he would do it. But
yeah,
it wouldn't be an issue for him to do it.
Nice. Oh, good luck to him. Good luck to him.
But I mean, okay. So, what was that? What were those early passions, the things you were interested in?
So yeah, I wanted to be an astronaut, or I wanted to be a performer, like an actor or a singer, or a hypnotist, or an author. It always sort of rotated through those things as I was growing up. Those were always the things that I wanted to do when I grew up. I think it was a lot of it was about wanting to entertain people, wanting to be able to do something that makes people go, oh, wow, I love that. Even though I was petrified of the thought of speaking to strangers. No way I could have ever got on stage at that time and spoken or performed or sang. It was just too terrifying. And yet those were things I wanted to be when I grew up.
Isn't that fascinating how all those things that you're interested in were literally completely held back by a phobia?
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right, you've got to this hiatus point. You're now in the toilet recognizing that something's got to change.
Yeah. So, by chance, I mean, call it coincidence or whatever you want to call it, a few weeks later, there was a free personal development seminar in London, and a friend pretty much dragged me along to it. I very nearly didn't go in because we got the workbooks, and at the back it had a bit where you had to write down the names and phone numbers of people you connect with. Again, no way I could do that, but my friend said, "It's all right, I'll stay with you the whole way through it. You promise?" "Yeah, I'll be with you the whole way through." "Okay, I'll just do this evening's bit and see how I get on," because it was like Friday evening and all Saturday and Sunday. I went to it. I found it really fascinating. And it was one of those ones where they actually take you through some of the processes. Obviously, being a free event, there was an upsell at the end, and their aim was to sell you into taking all of their coaching, NLP, hypnosis, and speaker training things. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a taster for the different parts of it. But we all actually made progress and breakthroughs going through it. And one thing in particular that really, really impressed me was they had one person who had always wanted to be on stage and dance to be a Michael Jackson dance impersonator, but he was too shy to be on stage. They got him up onto stage, went through this process with him, and then the person sort of stood back, cued the sound man, and the guy did the full Michael Jackson dancing. And I was fairly close to the stage at that point. You could see the guy to start with was terrified just being there. And yet by the end of it, you could see he was thoroughly enjoying doing the dancing. And I was thinking, either that's a very good actor or this is real. And the thing is, to get somebody that good an actor who nobody knows, that is really tricky to do. It would cost them a fortune to find an actor that good that nobody, that hasn't established a track record that people would recognize. So it's probably real. And then we went through some of our own breakthroughs as well. And that was the point. I thought, so they're selling hypnosis and NLP and coaching training. I could learn this stuff and use it to sort my own issues out. So that was it. I went, bought the full package, which included the speaker training, the whole lot. Thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm going all out to do it.
How much was it out of interest? How much was it?
£16,000.
Bloody hell, that's a lot of money. Wow, they did.
Well, you see, the thing is, it was worth it to me. £16,000, or spend the rest of my life too terrified to speak with strangers.
Well, indeed.
No question. Right, bam, do it. And I went through the courses and sorted all my own phobias and fears out. And as I was going through it, when you go through these courses, the trainings, you learn a bit of theory, and then you break into groups of two or three, and you practice the techniques with each other. Mm-hmm. And I started to notice that every time I did one with someone, they would always say, "Oh, you're really good at this." And I would sort of go, "Oh, thanks. You're pretty good yourself," you know, mm-hmm. thinking it's just the sort of thing everybody says to buoy each other up. And after a while, I started noticing, hang on, everybody says that to me when I work with them, but I don't notice them always saying it to other people. Maybe I am quite good at this.
Maybe there's a theme running here. Maybe there is.
Yeah. 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 And then once I'd finished it, told friends of what I'd done, and they said, "Oh," I remember the first person I spoke to about it said, "Oh, could you use that to help me get over my fear of spiders?" "Yeah, no problem. Let's do that." So we did. And I really enjoyed helping them. They got massive, massive benefits from it. And I was thinking, I really like doing this. It would be nice to make this a career, but I've got the high paid IT job. I've got all the outgoings and the house and the mortgage and everything that goes with that. I couldn't afford to give that up and start afresh coaching. So I'll just stick with IT and maybe help some people, help friends out on the side. And then the most magnificent stroke of luck came along. The director called me into his office and said, "Keith, I'm really sorry. Because of the financial situation," this was 10 years ago, "because of the financial situation, I'm afraid your position is now redundant. I've been with them for 12 years. It was basically a case of, here's a wheelbarrow full of cash, never come back. So, huh. If ever I was looking for a sign,
this is it.
This is it. Because the only thing that was stopping me transitioning to be a coach was lack of money. All of a sudden, bam, here's a wheelbarrow full of cash. Huh. And that was how I became a coach. There were not even a second's thought, not even a thought of, maybe I'll get another IT career and kind of start building. It was simply, right, that's it. I'm done with IT now. I'm a coach now. Let's really focus on building this up. And that was 10 years ago, and that's what I've been doing ever
since. Do you miss IT at all?
I don't. Yeah. I certainly don't miss all the politics and all that kind of stuff. But there's a couple of really good things that I got because of that IT career. I still have an interest in IT. I still enjoy it, still like doing it. So I manage all my own IT stuff, which when you're setting up your own business is really handy because it means I can handle, the websites, CRMs, email, all that stuff. Just do it myself for peanuts rather than have to spend lots of money up front.
Yes.
Plus, there's a lot of... when you're diagnosing problems and coming and resolving issues in IT, there's a lot of the skills that I developed in that which map over directly into the coaching side of things. So although I've been a coach for 10 years, been in IT for 20 years, so basically got 30 years of analysis and diagnostics and solving things. Just the first 20 years it was working with computers, now it's working with people.
It is interesting when you think about the two things. It's about breaking it down. You know, when you're coaching someone, you break down the problem to small pieces so they can get the solution, and when you're doing IT, you break down the problem to small pieces so you can find the solution. So there is a lot of crossover in there, isn't there?
Absolutely there is, yeah. And I mean, it's even things like, I mean, I know of some coaches who they have like their set ways of doing it. Right, you've got this problem. This is what we do. We do X, Y, and Z. And for many people, that will work. But what if you do X and you didn't get the result you're looking for? They just go straight into Y and Z. And then the client goes away going, well, I didn't quite get what I was looking for. I mean, if you do that, to fix an IT problem, you say, oh, I know what we do. We do this, then this, then this, because that's what we've always done. You do the first thing. It doesn't quite fix the issue in the way that you thought it would. You then just go straight in and do the second and third things. You're not going to have a working solution. So you've always got to do something, calibrate it. Did that work? Did I get the results I expected? If so, I go to the next step. If not, figure out what am I missing? What's going on here?
Yes.
And build on that. And I do exactly the same with the coaching, which is why we get such powerful results and get them really quickly as well.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So where is the passion in this for you now? Because it's like, you know, it's definitely performing. I'm not sure it is performing. Certainly the speaking is. So where is the passion in all this now for you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
The alarm clock, usually. No, I mean, you talk about performing, and part of what I do is the entertainer side has come through. So I now do, I don't at the moment for obvious reasons. We're recording this in the middle of the COVID pandemic. But outside of that, I do hypnosis and magic stage shows, which satisfies the whole performer side of things. Plus, I now take part in local theatre. But for the fear strategist side of things and the coaching side, what really motivates motivates me about that, makes me really passionate about that, is I know what it's like to have a life that's held back by fears. I know what it's like where you've got dreams, you've got these ambitions, things you want to do, but that fear, which you know is irrational, I mean, you know it doesn't make sense, but you still can't get through it. To be able to just remove that, completely eliminate that fear, take the thing you're scared of and change it from being a fear into actually being a strength, the massive change it can make in your life. I've been through that. I wish somebody had come along and helped me to make those changes 20, 30 years earlier. Life would have been so different. So to be able to actually just work with someone and very quickly help them completely get rid of a fear and to see the look of relief in their face and see the physical change that comes over them as they suddenly realize, oh my God, I'm not scared of that thing anymore. I can do all these things I've always wanted to do. There was, I mean, one lady I worked with, she actually had two phobias. One was a phobia of flying and one was claustrophobia. So put the two together, that was quite an issue.
Yeah, yeah, because you can't get on the plane and can't go to the toilet when you're on the plane. Yeah,
Quite. Now she lives in the UK, and at the time her husband worked in Hong Kong, so he was away in Hong Kong for months at a time.
Oh wow!
So she only ever saw him the short times he was in the UK. She would love to go and visit him in Hong Kong, but no way you could get on a flight over there. And then when you're in Hong Kong, it is a very packed place. The claustrophobic thoughts were like, oh, I couldn't manage that. So we had our session, completely conquered the flying and the claustrophobia. Couple of weeks later, she says, right, I've just booked myself on a flight. I'm flying out to Hong Kong for a week to surprise my husband. Go you. Wow, so she flew out there. They spent a week out there. I don't know if you've ever been in Hong Kong, but things like their equivalent of the London Underground, it makes ours look sparsely populated at times.
I have been packed. To Hong Kong, and I know exactly what you meant.
Yeah.
I just cannot... You think the train is full. Wrong.
Wrong. Here's another 100 people coming in this carriage. Oh, okay. And she was absolutely fine with every single aspect of it. It's like being able to have that level of impact in someone's life, positive impact, and help them do the things that they want. And, of course, it helped not just her. It had a positive impact on her husband as well. It's like, oh, my God, my wife can now come out and see me from time to time. Yes. So that's what really drives me with this, just knowing how big a change a seemingly small difference can make in someone's life.
Absolutely. We seem to have, what it does occur to me here, and this occurs to me a lot of the time, is like you mentioned the fact that if someone had brought this to you 30 years ago, your life would have been different. What I cannot understand is why there are some, I speak to so many speakers, so many people on this podcast, that if we could just bring some of these skills into education towards the end of children's education, wouldn't it make their lives better? I mean, yeah, if you could bring phobia release and intention setting, goal, all these bits and pieces that we now do, you'd so empower young people to move forward in life without the baggage of the past. But we don't do it. We just seem to do repeat the same process.
Yeah, you'll be fine. On you go.
Yeah, very. I mean, some of the things, some of these tools and so on would be really good, even for younger kids, even at primary school, to kind of start to immerse themselves in some of these tools. It really would make a huge difference in life. But I guess some things take a lot longer to change than others, and the education system is one of those.
It's funny, I had a realization. I started doing yoga recently, and I had a teacher at school in my primary school who I never liked very much, but I've suddenly realized he was teaching us yoga, and I didn't realize it, and I hadn't realized it for years, and that's what he was teaching us was yoga. And it's like, oh, how interesting, you know, he was trying to bring stuff to us that we would never have seen anywhere else, and we didn't know. And it's like, wow, you know, maybe he wasn't such a old toad as I thought he was.
Isn't it interesting how sometimes that the lessons that we particularly pick up from school are the ones where the teachers go off curriculum and teach this stuff because they feel it's important or that they feel it's passionate. I remember in primary two at school, so when that would have been when we were about six or seven, our primary teacher taught us the BSL alphabet. So we could sign do the alphabet in sign language.
Right.
Taught us that when we were six or seven. I can still remember it now. It's not on the curriculum or anything, but no. She taught us that for whatever reason. There are occasions where that does come in handy.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I always remember, I'm always grateful to Mrs. Carey for teaching us that way back then.
That's sweet, isn't it? It is, isn't it? It's funny how these things turn out. So Keith, moving my questions on, what is the meaning of success for you? Because clearly, because you came out of a successful IT career. So you had the salary, you had the house, you had those things. What I mean, and that is the tradition. The tradition is, you know, of success model is you go out, you be successful, and you make your mark in the world, and then, you know, eventually, after a good long life, you retire, and then you can enjoy it, and you can enjoy yourself at that point.
Yes, that's always an interesting one, isn't it? Yes, right. Slaves work really hard for 40 years so that you can enjoy yourself. What if I enjoy myself during those 40 years?
Oh, yeah. What is success? How does success fit for you? What do you define as a successful day?
I mean, to me, I would define success as being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it and enjoy doing it. It's pretty much, I'd say that's pretty much the definition of success, to be able to do the things you want to be doing, to enjoy doing them. Because if you're enjoying what you do and you get to do what you want to do, then what more could you want?
It's as good a model as any, So, I mean, if you were doing a project, I mean, is it money? Does money motivate you these days?
Money is important because the society in which we live, money is what enables you to get the things that you need. Money is what gets you a roof over your head. It's what keeps you fed and so on. But there comes a time when you reach this kind of a level where beyond that, money doesn't really get you that much more. Money is important in terms of the lifestyle that enables you to live, rather than money being important in and of itself. And there are often alternative ways in which you can get to enjoy that sort of lifestyle. So, yeah, money's important, but it's not the most important thing in life. It's simply a means to enable you to get the things which are important for you.
It's interesting. I know people who are incredibly wealthy, and money has no relevance to them. It's just a matter of a means of keeping score. Mm. And their success models are different. Their success models is about, well, it's more aligned to our next question. Their success models. And I know people who are actually quite, they manage, they don't, they're not exactly wealthy, but they manage. They're not wealthy at all. You know, money is an issue, but it never bothers them, and they have enough to get by, and that's all they need, and they have a very good life. And it's interesting how people have different relationships with it, and some people have a lot of struggle with it. And so it's really interesting how, and I've been in all those places of struggle and no struggle and at certain points in my life. So it's really interesting how that variety comes about around money. I mean, as someone points out who does a lot of work in money, it's never about the money. It's like our wealth is never about the money. our potential, you know, feeling wealthy is not about how much money you've got.
That's true. I mean, I know of people who go kind of completely opposite way and go, oh, money is totally unimportant. Money is important in the context of the society in which we live because of what it gets you. But pursuit of money in and of itself is kind of one of those hollow sort of goals. If your goal is just to have millions of pounds, why? Why have the millions of pounds? But if your goal is, I want to have this nice house, I want to be able to do this and do that, now you can see.
Hello. You've gone quiet on me. All the wonders of technology. It's not me.
They're the ones who tend to be happier. Yeah.
I lost you there for a moment. There, you went quiet on me.
I'm terribly sorry about that. Sorry about that. How far did we get?
I don't know. Should we plow on? Let's plow on. I'm sure.
Let's plow on, indeed.
Let's plow on, because you suddenly stopped and I didn't know where you were going to go with it, so I don't know what you stopped, and I won't know unless I went look back at the recording. So I'll just edit this bit out. Let's plow on. I love that. So there's someone I know who's in fact we probably most know. Have you heard of Dan Meredith?
I have, yes.
You have. I mean, the sort of thing he says it a bit more fruitily than I'm going to say it, but he says if you're a miserable git before you've got money, you're going to be a miserable git afterwards. You know, so
exactly, yes,
you are going to be where you are. So moving on.
Yes, I remember.
Go on, Karen.
Moving on, yes.
No, no, so you remember what?
I was going to say, I remember somebody said that money doesn't change you. It simply makes you able to be who you truly are.
Oh, yeah, it amplifies the good and the bad is what it does as well, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
So moving on to that idea of contribution, and you already touched on it already, because I am guessing you must have a massive contribution for the number of people you help. But is that, what do you see as your contribution to in the world?
Good question, isn't it? Good question. I mean, I guess my contribution to the world is helping people to get rid of those fears, helping people to open themselves up to living a more fulfilled life, to doing more of things they want to do without being held back. And I think if that's the only thing that I ever contribute to the world, changing a few thousand lives, helping a few thousand people to achieve things they wouldn't otherwise have achieved, I reckon that's a pretty good contribution, because it's not just about the people who I help. If I help somebody to conquer a fear, that then has a ripple effect, because they go on to achieve things that they wouldn't otherwise have achieved, which will help other people in turn who indirectly were only helped because I helped that person to conquer their fear. So it's kind of everything. Every time we make a positive change, it has that wonderful ripple effect around the world. It helps so many more people who we will never, ever hear about.
Yeah, it's amazing, and, isn't it? It is amazing that thing, isn't it? Where that just ripples out, that butterfly effect sort of thing, you know.
Exactly. I think that's a really empowering thing for us to remember, especially if you're thinking, oh, I'm only me. I can only have a limited impact in the world. Yes, you do have a limited direct impact, but the impact of all those impacts grows and does spread around the world, and there will be people who you will never ever hear about, you'll never know about, but their lives have been improved in some way because of something that you did. I think that's a very empowering thought.
It's the kindness we put out in the world, isn't it? That one. It's not quite the same, but it's just a story that comes to mind. When my son was born, talking 18 years ago, I went into the maternity ward to see my wife and to see him, and I already recognized him. He was in the arms of this wonderfully huge black nurse. She was holding my son, and he was obviously stressed. Oh. Mum was sleeping, and I said, you're lovely with him. And she said to me, you don't know who they'll be.
And it was like
she was just saying that, you know, about how every child is special because you don't know who they're going to be. And it was, but she was just so beautiful with this, you know, this baby who was stressed. And it was like, but it's that thing, isn't it? And the next thing ever, whenever you interact with people, you don't know what the outcome will be.
Exactly, but
I think you are privileged in what you do, because you change so many lives by what you offer, what you bring.
It's absolutely a privilege to be able to help these people to make the changes that they're looking for, and to help inspire other people to see what is possible. I mean, it's even people who will never work with me, but they see the effect of how maybe I've helped somebody. Even if that inspires them to think, maybe I can do something about my life. And they then go on to make the change themselves, or they go on to work with other people to make that change. The inspiration to encourage them to see that it's possible to make the change is, again, a really important thing to be able to bring to people.
So come on, you give us one story. There must be some other amazing stories that you've got. You know, the lady that went to Hong Kong, but there must be others.
Oh, goodness me. I mean, all sorts of it, from that level to much more mundane level. There's a gentleman who's an electrician who was terrified of heights. So anytime he was called to do things like install a TV aerial or to work on replacing some lights in a warehouse or whatever, he had to always turn the business down and give it to somebody else. We had our session together. It was a single session, completely conquered his fear of heights. He now he's able to handle all those things. As a result, his business has actually grown. He now employs a couple of other people simply because he's been no longer turning business away and sending them to other people. It's like, yeah, can do that, no problem. Built his business up to the point where he now employs a couple of other people as well.
Wow.
That's, again, it's like a seemingly a small change to help someone get over their fear of heights has impacted him and his wife, obviously, because their business has grown a lot. And these other two people who are now working for him, they now have jobs with him, which they would not have had he not made that fake.
The technique you use, is it the reframing technique in NLP? Is there a combination of things? Is it like that thing where you make the thing very small and you step away from it and you come back to it? Is it that process?
I know the process you mean. It's not. The interesting thing is, and this goes back to what I was saying about sometimes coaches will go, oh, you've got this issue, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. I never work that way. It's always bespoke, tailored to the individual, which is part of why I came up with the name Fear Strategist rather than anything else, because it's about understanding their strategies for doing fear. It's about helping them create new strategies of behaving and responding. And it's also about the strategy of how you figure out how somebody does fear and create a strategy for enabling them to work and behave in more empowering ways. So I have a wide variety of tools based around NLP and hypnosis. Mm-hmm. I've got a huge toolkit to draw upon, and it's going to be different for different people because different people have different different needs, different ways they respond, different things which taught them how to be scared. And they're going to respond and react in different ways as you start to clear some of those things out.
Wow, that's really interesting. Really interesting. It's it's a fascinating subject. I'd like to explore it. I'm nothing that I'm frightened of particularly, but I'd like to hear about those. So, Keith, what is the one question I haven't asked you that I should have done?
That is a very good question, isn't it? What is the one question you should have asked me that you haven't? I guess in the context of what we've been, I guess in the context of everything we've been speaking about, the question which is kind of leaping out, it's kind of screaming at me to say, ask this question. And the other question is, it's a common one that a lot of people have. And that is, yeah, fears, aren't they just part of who we are? Aren't we born with them? To which the answer is no.
All right. I mean,
we are not born scared of anything. Young children have absolutely no fear at all, as many parents will attest with sleepless nights and pulling their hair out as they strive to protect the child and keep them alive and stop the child from launching themselves off everything. Mm-hmm. We're not born scared of anything. We learn it all. So every single fear that we have, we learned at some point. Either somebody taught us it, or we learned it by making the best interpretation we could of what was going on at the time. We kind of learn these things. Now, we obviously need to have a healthy respect for the dangers of life. For example, don't run out into the traffic, or don't stick your hand into the fire. We need a healthy respect for the dangers in life.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between having a healthy respect for a danger and being terrified or having a fear or even a phobia of something. And it's all about how we learn these things. But the important thing is you're not born with any fears at all. Every fear you have has been learned, which means with the right guidance and stimulus and in the right situations, you can kind of unlearn that and learn different ways to behave, more empowering ways to behave.
I suppose
why it's possible for anyone to conquer any fear if they want to.
I mean, fear of strangers is very useful when you're sick, but it's debilitating when you're 20.
Exactly. And I mean, there's four words which I'm willing to bet everybody listening to this has heard when they were a young child, and they absolutely served them when they were a young child, but they don't necessarily serve them now. And some people, find those words. It's part of what caused me to be so terrified of strangers. Don't talk to strangers.
Yeah.
We're told that when we're really young. It is potentially life-saving advice. No two ways about it. But when was the last time somebody said, hey, Paul, you're big enough, you're old enough, you can go ahead and talk to a stranger now? Nobody tells us this.
I've never told that bit. No, can't remember anyone exactly saying that when I had to work it out for myself.
Exactly. And for some people, it's easy to make that connection. For other people, it's just that lesson. Don't talk to strangers. Oh, okay. It just kind of sticks in the back of the mind and bam, that's it. It's in there. You've now developed that fear of, oh my God, I can't talk to strangers. Oh!
Yeah. And I think these things, as you say, and that is a very core one. It's a very early one. So it's very, and I guess it builds quite strong pathways because it's so early. Mm. Yeah.
Oh yes. And so much of what we learn in our first few years of life, because that's where we develop much of who we become. And I mean, it's even things like attitudes and beliefs and values that our parents have. If you're brought up, your parents have this strong belief that money is the root of all evil. People with millionaires are all nasty people because they only got rich by screwing everybody over. If you have money, it makes you a horrible person. You're stingy. I mean, how likely are you going to be a person who will develop a reasonable amount of wealth? You're not going to be, because at the back of your mind, you've got that whole bit, oh God, if I get lots of money, that means I'm going to be a nasty person. But I'm not. I'm a nice person. Therefore, I can't have much money.
Yeah.
So there's things that we've learned from others, but not learned it in a way that serves or helps us. Mm. And it's the same with fears, so many fears as well.
It is fascinating. I mean, it's that thing about, they say most lottery winners, people who are unexpected lottery winners, tend to lose the money quite quickly because they just got no experience of handling that level of money. And
that's right.
So, and they get
so
rid
often
of
they
it.
End up, yeah, so often they actually end up worse off than they were before they'd won the money. Because, as you say, they got no experience of how to handle it. Suddenly they got all this money, spend. Suddenly they find loads of friends they never knew they had. Funny that. Spend it all, and then, bam, it's all gone. Not only do they no longer have that money, so financially it's put them back to where they started, but they've now kind of developed these habits of spending and not even bothering about checking money, which makes them even worse off than they had been originally.
Interesting to look at research on that one and see if that's actually true. See how true that is. It'd be interesting to discover that, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, we move on, I think. So tell me, Keith, I know that you've got a new book coming out, and I actually think it's coming out in a few days' time. That's why we are so funny reason why we're speaking, actually, on some level, because it seemed convenient to talk about this book coming out very shortly with you. So tell me about what it. Obviously, you are an author already. Is this your first or second book?
This is book number five.
Oh, good book lord, you are five. A very accomplished author.
it's coming out on Saturday, the 26th of September.
Lovely.
The book is called The Masks We Wear, and it's absolutely nothing to do with the current situation around the world. Timing could have been slightly better, perhaps, for the name, but it's all about the metaphorical masks that we all go through life wearing. Masks which we think serve us, which we think help and protect us, but actually do the exact opposite. They make life a lot harder for us. It separates us from people. It stops people from getting a chance to know us. So it's all about the masks we wear, what they are, how we develop them, why they're so dangerous, and how to get rid of them, and what life's like when you start to eliminate these masks, to get rid of these masks, and to truly be who you really are.
Wow.
That's it in a nutshell.
And that's available on Amazon Kindle, or is that a
Yeah, it launches on Kindle on the Saturday the 26th, and then it comes out in paperback on Saturday the 3rd of October, and available, as they say in all the adverts, in all good bookstores. So yeah, it'll be available online, available to order, or direct from me if you want.
How much is the book on Kindle?
The book on Kindle on launch day, the book is 79 pence.
Oh, wow.
On launch day. Just to I really want to get this in as many hands as possible. So if you pre-order it or get it on launch day, it's 79 pence. After that, it goes up. I think the price it's going up to is $7.99 on Kindle.
Lovely. Okay, well, we need to make sure everyone hears about it as much as possible. Because obviously, I know what happens on Amazon. You have to get a nice early bang on that one in terms of lots of people buying, getting into it. Because Amazon goes and gives it more coverage if you do that. So I understand the process. So it's a good plan. So fantastic. Exactly, that's really, really good news. Exactly. Looking forward to it. So if people want to get in touch with you outside of this book, what's the process? What's how do they find you?
Best way to find me is pop along to my website, which is keithblakemorenoble.com. No hyphens or anything, just keithblakemorenoble.com. Or if I'm on most of the social media, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn, all of those ones, again, under the name Keith Blakemore Noble. So you'll find
that's
me on any of those.
Easy to remember.
Pop along, have a chat.
Exactly. I will put all those links on the podcast page and people can get in touch with the need. And I'm sure there must be some listeners out there that could do with a little bit of fear removal. I'm sure you will get some interest.
Yeah, I look forward to helping.
So, Keith, the final question that I ask all my guests, because it's the one question that we all have to come up with an answer, or we don't. I mean, I guess some people don't bother. But it's the one question that kind of like is the big question in life. You know, what's it all for? Why are we here? What is the meaning of life for you?
What is the meaning of life? Now, there's a question, isn't it? For me, the way I see things, I see this about life as well as everything else. Nothing has any absolute inherent meaning. Things only mean the meaning that we apply to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same for life. So life means whatever you want to choose it to mean. Which sometimes people find that a bit, maybe a bit of a scary thing. It's like, oh, what, you mean there's no meaning? It's down to me to choose what it means? Oh, it's a lot of pressure. On the other hand, it means you are free to choose. What does life mean to you? Because ultimately, you are the one living your life. Why not choose what it means to you? Because once you know what it means, then you can go full out to fulfill that meaning. And what more empowering way than to choose what it means for you, so that when you reach the end of life, whenever that is, and I hope for each and every person listening, I hope that's a long way off in the future. But when you reach the end of that life and you look back over your life, you can go, this is what I chose life to mean. And this is how I fulfilled that meaning every single day. I think that's such an empowering thing for you to choose what it means rather than to live by what others say that it should mean. Go for what it really means to you. And if you have no idea what it means, what would you like it to mean? What would be the best thing it could mean for you that would enable you to have the best life you can, and in doing so, help and inspire so many others to have the best lives that they can?
That's wonderful. That's a lovely, lovely way of putting it. Keith Blakemore Noble, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure, a total joy talking to you today. I've loved our conversation, and there were lots of rabbit holes I could have easily gone down with you, and I successfully guided my way from those because we only have so much time. But I really, really thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. So thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you so much, Paul. I absolutely loved it. It's always a pleasure chatting with you, and I had a great time with this cast. I think we covered some really interesting areas. Thank you, Paul.
Too. Thank you. All the best.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Keith Blakemore Noble. Keith has a new book, The Masks We Wear. It is now available on Amazon at a special pre-order price of just 79 pence until Sunday the 27th, when it goes up to £7.99. Heath is generously including £100 of resources and goodies for anyone who pre-orders. You can find the link to that in the show notes or on Keith's website at keithblakemorenoble.com. If you would like to connect with Keith, you can find him on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And all of the above links for those and his website you can find at the Life, Passion, and Business page underneath this podcast. And finally, so do check out the Life, Passion, and Business Facebook page. I am live every week with a Sunday reflection and now on Wednesdays with a Live at 5. So that is it for now. Thank you so much for your time and attention. I'll catch you later. All the best.